After years without an interest rate cut, Australia has had two in quick succession, taking the cash rate to a new record low of 1%. And while the Reserve Bank acknowledges the fundamentals of the economy are strong, they're clearly not satisfied with the current state of play. Today, RBA Governor Philip Lowe signalled the bank could cut rates even further if infrastructure spending and tax cuts don't do enough to stimulate the economy. But with wages still stagnant, it's unclear how much difference even lower interest rates might make. Stephen Jones is the Shadow Assistant Treasurer and Shadow Minister for Financial Services, and he joins us this evening. Stephen Jones, welcome.
Good evening. Good to be with you.
The Reserve Bank is clearly concerned that inflation is still so low. What do you make of Philip Lowe's comments today?
Oh, look, this is just the last in a series of comments that in which the Reserve Bank governor has said that he believes that we've just about reached the end of the capacity of monetary policy to stimulate the economy. It's a not too subtle call to the government that we need to be pulling down on some fiscal levers. That means initiatives which are going to get more money into the economy, more money into people's pockets, infrastructure spending, looking at other ways that we can stimulate spending through the household sector.
Interest rates are almost zero. Would another interest rate cut make much of a difference?
Look, I think what the Reserve Bank governor is saying is over the short term, he doesn't believe that another interest rate cut is going to get the sort of stimulus which is going to make much of a difference around employment, much of a difference around household spending. Over the longer term, it might, but over the short term, if you read between the lines of the Reserve Bank governor's speech and previous statements, he doesn't believe that you're going to get a big boost, the same sort of boost that you might have got in years past.
Now, you say clearly what the government's done so far isn't working, but isn't it just too early to make that call? I mean, these tax cuts were only legislated a couple of weeks ago. You know, the infrastructure spending is starting to flow into the economy. Isn't there a sort of wait-and-see period?
Look, I think we have tried the wait-and-see approach before. If you look at some of the criticisms we could fairly make of what we did ourselves in the late 1990s, we waited too long before we put fiscal stimulus into the economy. We saw unemployment grow at unacceptable rates. And when you look back on it, when economic historians look back on it, they say if we'd have gone earlier, if we'd have gone harder, we probably could have avoided hundreds of thousands of people being out of work. And in fact, it was that approach which informed the very successful, in fact, almost uniquely successful approach that the Rudd and Gillard governments took to fighting the GFC in the earlier parts of 2007 to 2010. So I don't think there is an argument for waiting, and I think we should have all things on the table to look at how we can stimulate household spending and get more money into the economy. It's why, for example, this week we've said there is a case to be made for increasing the rate of New Start. There is a case to be made for more spending, bringing forward spending in infrastructure where we can get some stimulus into particularly regional economies. All things should be on the table. Here's two ideas.
Today, the outgoing Secretary of the Department of Prime Minister and Cabinet, Martin Parkinson, said low productivity was essentially holding Australia back. Business agrees. Does that mean that there is a case for industrial relations reform here too?
Look, why do we always jump? First, Martin Parkinson, congratulations on a stellar career. Why do we always jump to industrial relations when we're looking at the need for productivity reform?
Well, how would you improve
my
productivity?
In my experience, and when you get a lot of the employer associations behind closed doors, you know some of the first things that they point to? It's about the quality of middle management. It's about the quality of management and the expertise of management in this country. And some of the best yields that you're going to get are not through further tax reform, not through industrial relations changes, but it's about improving the quality of management and the management decision making, particularly at that middle level. And I think that's where we're floundering, and I think that's where much more attention needs to be put. I agree with Martin Parkinson. We've got a terrible problem with productivity. We tried, and in fact, Australia tried the low road, the attacking workers' wages and conditions throughout the work choices era. productivity tanked. You didn't get the sort of yield that you're expecting.
But okay, but no one's talking about necessarily those reforms. It doesn't have to be industrial relations in the same way as work choices. It's a fairly extreme example, and the electorate, you're right, made a judgment on that.
But
other industrial relations reform.
Let's go to the sorts of areas where we think we are going to get a big yield, and I think it's definitely through improving the quality of middle management. And I say to those calling for industrial relations reform, what is it that you really want to do now that you can't do? I mean, we've got one of the most casualised workforces in the world. We've got wage growth at record lows. We've got an unacceptable level of reserve labour, if you like, where despite the efforts of the Reserve Bank governor, despite the efforts of many others, employment growth is just not there at sufficient levels. And what we're seeing is the spare capacity within the labour market is not being filled by new jobs being created. It's being filled by people going from very part-time jobs to slightly less part-time jobs. A lot of people working less hours than they actually want to work. And so I think we've got to be looking at different levers, pulling down on different levers. Fiscal policy has a role to play. Looking at the quality of management and middle management and education and training in that area has a role to play as well.
The Prime Minister has ordered a review of the superannuation system before the next scheduled increase in the compulsory contribution. What would you like to see come out of that?
Look, we welcome analysis of superannuation, but one thing I've got to say we're very concerned of, and that is that this is going to be a stalking horse for the campaign that has been waged within the Liberal Party to cut the planned increases in superannuation, in the superannuation guarantee level. Currently at 9.5%. Was supposed to be at 12% by now, by the way. And in fact, the decisions of the Abbott government to freeze the SGL level at 9.5% have left many workers thousands and thousands of dollars out of pocket already. We're concerned that if this review is simply about axing future increases in the superannuation guarantee level, a worker on average wages at the moment, just say somebody in their 30s today who's on a wage of $80,000 a year, by the time they retire, they will be $90,000 worse off in their retirement savings. That's not acceptable, particularly when the people championing these changes themselves are on superannuation benefits of 15%. Surely the people who clean their offices are entitled to something that approaches the percentage of superannuation that they're enjoying themselves.
New South Wales Liberal Senator Andrew Bragg says super should not be compulsory for people earning less than $50,000. Now, I know you've been very critical of this proposal, but at the heart of it is a critique also of the fact that a lot of these people end up on the age pension anyway. Isn't it worth considering a proposal that allows someone to buy a house or to build their assets or to do something else with their money when they're on low incomes?
Look, we shouldn't make one being the enemy of the other. We know, we've tried this experiment in the past, by the way, when superannuation was voluntary or whether it was when it was produced at the discretion of an employer. Men had it, managers had it, senior employees had it, women rarely did, and low-paid workers mostly never did. So we've tried the voluntary experiment before, and what has led to is low-paid workers having a very dire set of circumstances when they retire. What is often dangled in front of workers when this argument is run is, well, if you don't take the money as superannuation, you might take it as wages. And frankly, that's disingenuous. The scheduled increases in superannuation are set to take place at 0.5% per annum increments from 2021 through to 2025. Over that entire period, there'll be an increase of 2.5%. That is less than 1 year's increase on the government's own estimate in wages if we were to return to trend in average wage increases. So 2.5% not kicking in for another 2.5 years, and yet we're supposed to make this trade-off today. Look, it really is disingenuous. There's no way the government can say, well, if you don't take it as super, you'll get it as a wage rise. That never happens. What workers will end off is no increase in their wages and no increase in their superannuation as well. And we just don't think that's right.
Very briefly, Scott Morrison's foreign fighters bill has become law, passing the Senate this afternoon after Labor expressed doubts. You ended up voting for it. Now, I ask you this, I know it's not your portfolio area, but as a Labor lefty, you've passed a bill that you've said gives too much power to Peter Dutton to exclude citizens suspected of aiding terrorists overseas. Are you entirely comfortable with this?
Look, I'm not entirely comfortable with the powers that have been given to the minister.
But you helped to the minister.
Well, at the end of the day, the bill was going to go through the Senate. The crossbenchers were supporting the government. We made quite clear the sorts of amendments or changes to these laws that a Labor government would make if we're successful at the next election. But the fact of the matter is we're not. It is our job as an opposition to point out the shortfalls in the legislation. But we've generally taken the view, except in the most extreme circumstances, that we don't try and politicise or take a partisan approach to national security legislation. One thing I can be certain of is if Labor wins at the next election, there'll be a requirement for a judicial warrant for the sorts of powers that are currently proposed to be exercised by the minister.
Stephen Jones, thanks for coming on.
Great to be with you.
That's the Shadow Assistant Treasurer and Shadow Minister for Financial Services there, Stephen Jones.